Welcome to Star Fleeters Uncle. I am Paul France, owner of France Games, of an SFB Online, FedCom Online, and Starfleet Warlord. Just remember how to join us for a talk guest every Thursday night starting at 9:30 p.m. Eastern Time. You can either join us on the Starfleet Universe Online Discord server, just join the SFU On Call stream voice channel, or you can find the invite to the server on the SFUOnCall.com website, or you can go to twitch.tv at twitch.tv/SFUOnCall to join the chat there. And of course, the lovely turn the podcast available iTunes and various other feeds around the net. And quick news from A to B this week: Albert and Steve Cole was teaching Albert the history of the mysteries that Albert would need to take over Steve Cole's job. Albert also is working on the act of book 3. The book is quote unquote complete, but he's filling in missing stuff and collecting art. Steve Cole has been working on fiction and discussing a possible hard copy version of The Merchants of the Federation. Also, he was discussing a software project with his friend Hernan. And they handed it over to Albert. Also, discussing some new minis with a guy who showed up. Also, working with the SSD team to get the fighter mess all cleaned up. And also, Steve Patrick was busy working on Module K, doing his best to help him have something to work on and not get sucked into rules questions and thinking about all the exceptions to those yes-no questions. So, try to keep Steve Patrick focused on that. When it comes to Found Law on the online store for this week, we have F&E Civil War's double-sided counter sheet. It's only $8. This is a double-sided counter sheet from Civil Wars. Always good to have extra copies laying around, which includes the pink Romulans, wind ships, and the ones able to leave the cluster, the sharks. And the loyal Lyrans from the early years, and the rebellious brown Zinnies and rebellious purple Lyrans. You can use them for Civil Wars or simply as extra counters to mark special fleets or other sectors. Moving on forward to the SFB Online tournaments, when it comes to Sapphire Star 19 tournament, they're kind of closed, kind of open. There's one person, Tyler, who I've been emailing. I have not heard anything back from him yet. So until I hear, unless he comes back to me quickly, I'm gonna have to drop him tournament because he's not doing anything. He's not. I need him. He's not signed up completely. It means he hasn't paid for it. But I still need one more person to start the tournament. Sorry, I'm distracted by kitties. And also the 500 BPV tournament run by Jeff Clark. He is actually working on that. He's got back from vacation. But now he's got a SurveyMonkey survey. Jeff Clark has put a free option for SurveyMonkey, which I know this. Only the first 25 responses count. So you need to fill it out quickly before hopefully there ain't going to be more people, any people up to 25. So that's considering that most of the tournament is maybe 10 people. Maybe 50, might 10, 15 people might reply to the survey when it comes to how do people want to go forward for the next tournament. So after the survey is filled out get enough responses. So hopefully we'll get that started and that'll decide how the tournament actually will be run. So hopefully that will be done quickly. When it comes to the online client, actually, I've been working on the non-IRC version of the client. I have HTTP server, which I want to set up. That's that would allow for better connectivity, you know, because currently there's the problem with IRC, which Neon, that's Matt, I think Matthew Potter, yeah, Matt Potter, him had a problem with getting dropped connections. Well, that should not occur with an HTTP based server. In that case, it's just HTTP based, and it's not, you don't have to remain that constant connection to the server that the current IRC based server is requires. Now, obviously, there's certain things that would be lost, some features that would be lost, but at least at the beginning, one. But I think it's definitely a good way of going forward. And of course, the one of the benefits is that I can also build a web-based client and possibly have people actually use their browser to, if not play it at first, at the very least, watch the games using the web browser, which I think is always a cool idea. When it comes to Starfleet Warlord, when it comes to Die Hard 59, this is the last week. Not this is not last week. Next week is the last week. No, actually, this week is the last week. That if you don't get your, if you want to be part of Die Hard 59, you need to get your orders in so that I can we can run the turns. Because the third turn is when it's actually, I think that makes it maybe not this week, but in 2 weeks. And when it comes to Die Hard 50, yeah, that's going quite well. And same for the standard game 97. Actually had one of the players drop out. Basically, they ghosted me. So, and since they weren't responding, I'm not sure why they weren't responding. Whether it was because of, because actually the account they have is an email address for school. For I know them, that they're a professor and they lost their job, or they're a student and they're lost their email account. You know, don't know. It has not bounced, so I can't tell when it comes to that. When it comes to the library report for this week, actually I got some updated Federation from Frank LeMay. I have not had a chance to process them because I've been working on other things. Particularly, I've got a retreat weekend happening next weekend, which reminds me, I will not be doing a podcast next week. So enjoy the 1 week without a podcast. So with that is news for this week. It's me, yes, the one and all, Paul Friends, welcoming you to Starfleet Universe On Call. And tonight we have Doug. Say hi, Doug.
Hi, Doug.
And we have me. That's it for this evening, anyway. Of course, got the Discord server going up and running. You got Doug there, and have me there, and no one else. That's fine. Actually, right now, excuse me, if you don't mind me, I will be switching over. Okay, this is the live feed. Okay, just make sure that I'm actually watching the live feed for of myself. Okay, and that looks good. And no, I don't want the mod view, the moderator view at the moment. Might want to do that later, whatever. Most of the time, I don't need it because I every once we get as who's that? I was talking to my daughter. Yeah, I was talking to her about that, which is if we needed some a bot to manage the Twitch chat. There are ones available that auto kill people and so forth. And, oh, sorry, auto ban. So, but at the moment, it has not gotten to that point. We
It's not called Skynet, is it?
get might be called Skynet.
Just asking. Just asking for a friend.
Understood. Yeah, I forgot there were some bots, but obviously for me, I'm small enough feed that I don't need that. It's like I get a bot or some spammer once every 10 streams or something like that. You know,
it's like every week or two. It's more often than once every 10. It's pretty often.
No, it's not.
Yeah, seems like it. Seems like there's always somebody in there for a minute.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Well, when it comes to the spammers, because as I said, I think we get one out of ten, maybe one out of five, as much as that. But that's about it. You know, most of the time we have what was it? There's one guy who would hang out for the whole stream. That you know would point out things every once in a while, which is great. You know, I always love to have more people in the chat room. Or now we have Iggy. Hi Iggy. He's in the chat room right now, which is fantastic. And obviously anyone else who wants to join, feel free. And just a reminder for you, Doug, because I already said this as part of the news portion, and just in case you don't listen to the news portion, because on YouTube it's now split. There will be no podcast next week.
Wow.
Next week I'll be on a retreat. So, and I also have to send an email out to my dear sweet Starfleet Warrior players that I will not be able to process turns next weekend. Period. It's going to be sending your turns. I will get to them on Monday. That's all I can do. And that's going to be Die Hard 58 turns. And also Standard Game 97. Both of those will be processed on Monday. I expect everyone to have their emails in and ready, you know, the turns in. And so I can just start and have them done by the end of under the night, you know. And also, that reminds me, I have to do some stuff for Die Hard 59 tomorrow before I process turns, because I screwed up and forgot to turn on the events for Die Hard 59. I will be correcting all of those turns so that the next event is that event, so that for the next turn, if it was an event that doesn't do anything except for some special abilities for the next turn, then there's nothing to do. But if there is something, I will perform the action manually and have it so that you have the results before the next turn is run. So, but anyway, just a quick update when it comes to what's happening, what is and not happening next week. Big surprise. When it comes to the topic for this evening, that's one thing I hadn't figured out. Though there is the obvious thing, which was one thing I was working on both when I was at Gamers and also I've been working on this week. There's a weird glitch in the software. I'm not exactly sure what it is at the moment. I found an exception being thrown. So I need to figure out why the exception is being thrown. That's one. And then there's another one, which is it's sending an invalid piece ID.
In which software?
SW Online client. I'm not sure why the client is screwing up the piece name in the client. It just is. Actually, it's not a name. It's an identifier. Each piece gets their own custom identifier in that game. The name starts with the person who actually created the unit, and then an offset for that. Is what that's generated for that person. Now, in theory, that game piece can be the ownership. Actual ownership doesn't have to be the same as the piece that the owner that created the piece. It can be actually the actual owner could be somebody else. But that's what the initial ownership ID is. And that's I forget, it's been a while since I looked at this part of the code, which is whether that actually that piece ID gets I don't think it gets changed when you load the game. Actually, I'm pretty sure it doesn't, because you can't, if you change it, then it screws other people up. Because if they have two people who load the game, and unless those IDs match, then things get wonky. But I still probably should look at that anyway. But anyway, that is obviously the beauties of the one thing that, as I mentioned in the news portion, that is the beauty of, I'm not, just for those of you who know about this thing, which is HTTP based server instead of IRC based server. I actually was looking at that at gamers going, when's the last time I actually looked at this? And I had looked at it like 3 years ago, and I went, whoa. Hadn't touched it for 3 years. And of course, it was worse than that. Not as bad as, okay, yeah, I hadn't touched the code for 3 years. The problem, there was a minor issue called that the code that I had left the code at that moment in time 3 years ago in an invalid state, meaning that it would not run. I had assumed that I would leave it in a good state. No, I was in the middle of doing, putting in certain things into the server to better handle how the actual client works. One of those things, I know this for a fact. I remember the last thing I'd worked on previously with that, which is basically that the one feature, which is kind of critical, which is the ability that when, okay, you have one person in the room, and then you get a new person in the room. When that person gets in the room, what's the first thing they got to do? But the first thing they have to do is they have to obviously log into the room. And then after that, they have to go and say, okay, give me all of the pieces that are part of the game and send them to me. And that's the one thing that I had not previously worked on. I just had mainly worked on, okay, you got two players in the room. And then when you add this piece, it shows up on this guy's display, this guy's board. On the other player's board. And then when you move it on player one's board, it actually would move it on player two's board. And I hadn't worked on the actual actually loading the game from that. When the person enters a room, or obviously even when a player doesn't enter a room, when the observer enters the room. There's some additional stuff that I have to work on the server. I have to look at it because of, I know the one thing I had to also do, which is currently that normally with the client, what you would do is you would log out the system. Now, the server does support a logout, and I'm not sure if it does everything correctly. I have to double check. Because at the moment, I don't think it is. But at the same time, I have to make sure I support the idea of someone basically just their client dying and not actually doing a good logout, but have a timeout so that to say that, okay, you have a person in a room. And the person doesn't check in to that room after a certain period of time, let's say 2 minutes. After that period of time, that person should be removed from the room. Say, okay, obviously that person dropped and just didn't tell us that he'd actually left the room. Or they dropped, so I need to have it so that it actually recognizes that, cleans up any drops like that. And I think, if I recall correctly, I put in code to clean it up when there was a timeout, but I hadn't put in the loop to actually check for a timeout. I think that was one thing I didn't know how to do, because the whole thing's actually written in Perl. I want it to be something relatively lightweight, relatively simple. And it is. It's a relatively simple server, which is, and I, the plan is actually is to open source it and have, so if anyone wants to, they can use it. Now, obviously, if I open source it, you know, and my guess is that there's going to be nobody who's going to be interested in this server, but we'll just have to wait and see. Right now, it's running under something called Plask. Those of you who know Perl and know about web servers, they know about Plask. But if you don't, then it's like, okay, it's just another one of those technical terms that you developers use. Like, yeah, it is. So that's going forward. Okay, you know, as I said, I'm getting back to work on that, on and off on that. Just to let you know, Doug, one rabbit here. I did update Eve, so I've got the latest thing for, I think, Legion, something like that.
Mm-hmm.
And so I got that, and actually I stopped by the Eve online, the Eden store. New Eden store, that's what it was, that's what it's called, and picked up, mm-hmm. the I think it's 15,000 training points that you get, the free training points.
Yep, and it has a result certificate for your characters too.
Mm-hmm.
Now and that only applies to the character that you drop it on, just so you know.
Right.
So if you want to, you can just hang on to it forever, leave it out in your redeem thing.
Mm-hmm.
And like, if you decide you want to change the look of one of your characters, it allows you to do the full body resculpt on it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, which I find it like funny that they have that in the game like that at all, because like the whole thing about the character look was they were doing it for a thing decade ago, where they were talking about coming out with like walking around in the station as your character. And then they never did it. So, because they had another game that they were developing like 15, 20 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
Do you remember that story?
Yeah. You told me about that.
Yeah. Basically, it was they were developing a game based off Vampire the Masquerade as a 3D, you know, character game and first person kind of game. And that project went down the tubes eventually, but they kept the 3D character generator, and they used that so that you could make your character like what you're going to use for your snapshot. And people get really creative with that. I do like mm-hmm. playing around with that once in a while. If you ever look at my characters, no, and you just pull up the screenshot on it, mm-hmm. you can, or the look at the portrait. Like there's an option when you look at somebody's character,
right?
And you can like other click it and say, look at portrait. And then you can also choose to look at the entire body.
Mm-hmm.
So you see the whole sculpt, and it's interesting. And of course, knowing what people are like, they put some restrictions on that too. So, but basically, that's, I think they're going to be doing the resculpt thing. They might be doing it as a regular part, like of the weekly Omega giveaway, where they give you the extra little bonus skill points.
Mm-hmm.
So,
yeah. I saw that some of the things were like 50% off or something like that. And I used some of my Plex.
Their whole game store, to me, I don't get excited about it.
Oh yeah, well, I had like I had like 400 Plex, and it's like I'm not using it, so let's suspend a little bit of it.
Yeah.
I bought a few things which I thought looked kind of cool.
Well, what's interesting about the Plex thing is that it's actually real world money almost.
Mm-hmm.
You can buy it in game, but it's all generated from people buying it.
Mm-hmm.
So if you look at your in-game sales, that's all that Plex is something that somebody bought somewhere and put on the market for like to make extra ISK in the game real quick. It's their pay to win sort of thing. So like if you don't have the time to grind hundreds of millions of ISK, you can buy X hundred Plex, put it on the market, and make a few hundred million so you can buy your shiny ship.
Mm-hmm.
Basically, it's a shortcut for grinding.
Yeah, that was one thing that I looked up, and it's like I was shocked. Just for giggles, you know, I was looking at training and so forth, mm-hmm. and I looked at what was it? One of the social ones. I think it was distribution.
Okay, distribution connections.
Yeah, distribution connections. And how much it cost to buy it?
And now, was that off the market or off the market? Okay. Were they asking for it? A ridiculous,
55 million ISK.
Yeah, that is kind of ridiculous.
There was only one I saw available on the market.
Yeah, it costs like 15,000 loyalty points. And an additional, I think, 10 million ISK mm-hmm. through the loyalty point score.
Mm-hmm.
So we did that mission. Where we did a handful of missions the other day.
Right.
You were getting loyalty points off of that.
Mm-hmm.
Security missions are the fastest way of making loyalty points,
mm-hmm.
and you can solo most of them. And I did throw you a cruiser that mm-hmm. you can fit up later mm-hmm. and run level twos with pretty easily. But basically, you just have to check in the different corporations' loyalty point stores to see what they have.
Mm-hmm.
Like Hyleco over in Mora, that one has, I believe that one has the security connections.
Mm-hmm.
Although I would have to double check.
Right.
But Zohar and Sons,
mm-hmm.
They have the distribution connections ones.
Right.
And they also have a whole bunch of distribution agents if you want to do it on a more passive, less pew-pew way.
Right.
You can pull up the agency, for instance. Here's a shortcut way to make distribution stuff in E work for you. You grind your loyalty points with Zohar and Sons
mm-hmm.
to get to where you can do it, the level twos or the level threes.
Mm-hmm.
And you pick your agent through the agency. You go in agency, you go missions, mm-hmm. you go agents, you go into their menu and pull it down to Zohar and Sons through mm-hmm. faction, Amar, then Zohar and Sons. And you specify distribution missions.
Mm-hmm.
It'll show you all the agents within it, however many jumps you've selected. And you'll see that there's a cluster of them between Pofle and Danyana. And there's two different stations in Danyana that have them as well. And between those three stations, you can pick up, I think, level twos and threes.
Mm-hmm.
And if you were to use the bestower that I gave you, that particular hauler,
mm-hmm.
you should be able to literally fill up that thing with like three at a time. And then you choose on the, and you'll get the hang of this pretty quick. You just choose your route until you switch which one to go to first until you get your shortest route for all three of them.
Mm-hmm.
And you do a route back to one of them. And you knock out like three missions in a row. instead of like get one runway over somewhere and then runway back and rinse and repeat. So you knock out two or three of them at a shot until you don't feel like doing them anymore. And also that way, if you get ones that are taking you into low sec and you don't want, if you don't want to do those, then you decline that agent and just remember that you can't go back to that agent for 4 hours. Unless you're willing to risk that they'll pull up one that you have to let sit for a while if you don't want it.
Mm-hmm.
So, that's basically that. But there's all sorts of things we could do with that. When I do get into an apartment sometime in the next week or two, and good Lord, I'm hoping it's the next week, and pick up a stable internet connection, I want to do podcasting of that and stuff in WoW.
Mm-hmm.
And just, you know, it's a pick a day. It's like, tell me a day that's reasonably convenient for you to pop on once in a while. And
mm-hmm.
I'll make sure to, you know, put that as the official time. And then I'll just have my random stuff elsewhere.
Okay. Okay. Yeah, we have to work exactly how we want to work that out. I mean, how the podcast is going to be set up and so forth.
Yeah, we have a good bit of it kind of set up. Ideally for me, we might get a new box after I'm all settled in.
Mm-hmm.
Just set up a new box that can work with the large monitor.
Mm-hmm.
Because Eve is one of those games where it really pays to have a big monitor. Especially when you're doing exploration stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And if we're doing the higher level security missions.
Mm-hmm.
Because in the missions, there's mining missions, security missions, and distribution missions. For working with the agents for the most part. Security gives the best, quickest payout, usually. But they're kind of averaged out. I mean, if you were to run a bunch of distribution missions and you compare it with the time that it takes to run the security missions, the security missions will still win out overall in beneficial stuff for you. But the amount of loyalty points kind of can work out to be about the same. It's just a matter of like the gameplay that you want at that particular point in time. The security missions are much more intense as far as concentrating on what you're doing goes and how dangerous they can get as you go up the food chain on them. But they also have additional rewards because you get all those bounties for killing all the pirates and drones and whatnot. And you just have to be kind of careful on faction killing missions and just trying to avoid the ones where you'll lose faction. And that's where doing a variety of these things comes into play. Like, if you're running security missions and you start declining security missions because you don't want to kill your faction against another one of the game factions, then you can switch over to the distribution or the mining missions. The mining missions are kind of weird. As you go up in difficulty on them, they become very much like the security missions, except you also have to do the mining thing.
Right, right.
And level of difficulty wise, it gets to where you need to either start fleeting up or you need to go in with a good fighting ship instead of a mining ship to clear out the however many waves of NPCs there will be.
Mm-hmm.
And then go back in and mine everything.
Wow.
And those missions, along with the security missions, they provide a good bit of bounties from NPCs. And also, when you start taking the time to do all the looting and salvage
mm-hmm.
can provide another whole rabbit hole of stuff, which can generate more ISK out of it. So,
right. Now, I know. I noticed that with the limited message that we did.
How much stuff and then some of the other stuff we can do is go and do exploration and like NullSec and wormholes and stuff like that. And that to me could be, you know, that's a good solo thing, but it can also be a good team thing. So like, you know, you have less worries about somebody whacking you if you've got somebody watching your back. So there's that. And, you know, nothing says ha ha like the guy warps in to kill your exploration ship and, you know, my cruiser or destroyer blows him up. So there you go. Mm-hmm. But I digress.
Yes, you do digress. But that's fine. You know, I'm a little brought up the topic. So.
Oh, no, I'm okay. I'll talk about you the entire show if you let me.
Oh, I know you will. And then this will turn to this week on EVE Online. At least for us, anyway. Not really.
And that's where we could have the other podcasting going too, you know.
Right, exactly. That's probably the way it's going to go. Just that while Doug was mainly talking about that, I was looking at the survey that Jeff brought up. Those of you that actually are, sorry, I took the survey, so I can't see it anymore. Actually, I might be able to see it. Let me just see if I can go over here. Okay, cool. I brought up a different browser, so I can see it, which is fine. What I'm going to do is I'm going to show it to y'all. Because that's another topic I want to discuss, which is relatively short. Oh, there. Speak of the devil and they shall appear. And okay. I should have went to my moderating tools. Got a spammer on the stupid stream. But anyway. No, I'm not about to do that because you're an idiot. Now, okay, the different formats, single elimination, double elimination, round robin with total scores, or round robin with points determined by the top two players for a final round. Personally, I like a single elimination tree because that means when if you lose, you're out of it. Okay, you're good. The problem with the double elimination tree in my mind is that it will take so much longer to go through. Round robin could be nice, so if we're not knocked out early, but again, the problem with round robins in my mind is that we have to play multiple games, which means that this tournament that might last normally it lasts for like 6 months. For the last tournament, this is gonna. If we go for round robin, it's gonna last at least a year. And as I found out, the problem with tournaments that last longer, you have the problem with people dropping out. And I know that for a fact when it comes to Starfleet Warlord, in that, you know. You have the games, and these games last somewhere between a standard game could last the way we're going right now. It can last like 3 months, and that's because we're doing turns every single week. If we have a diehard game, which normally is every other week, that one's going to take at least 6 months to play out, and invariably we have people drop out. And in some cases, well, it's dropping out because they're in no condition to actually continue on in that game. But in some cases, they ghost me, and they disappear. In some cases, and I appreciate this, the people think I'm real life has taken over my life, and I have no more time. I have no time in my schedule for continuing this warlord game, and they'll drop out for that reason. That happens for some people. Depends upon the player. Because the problem, of course, as denoted before, when it comes to Starfleet Warlord, we have an aging community. So,
both an aging community and it's mail.
Yeah.
Even though it's email, it's still play by mail.
Right.
And it takes time.
Right. No, it takes time. Sometimes the biggest time is for them to fill out the information. If they use the aid and send me actual files, I can import it, load the turn up and run it in like around 5 to 10 seconds. So I can get through a whole turn. If everyone's got their orders in legend row and there's no manual turns, I can get that done relatively quick. The problem is we have a few manual people that one actually sends me faxes. And then the other person these days, actually, they stopped sending me faxes, which, hey, they want to spend the money, they can spend the money. They will take photographs of the sheets. Yeah, that or they'll scan them into a scanner. And then they'll send me a PDF of all the sheets. And then I enter in the order by hand. That takes me a heck of a lot longer. But anyway, getting back to the game. They said, do you prefer expanding the empires available? And we have Andromedans, Paravians, some other empire, or none of the above, because some people go, I don't want to expand it. And of course, me being me, I went, there were Andromedans. Expanding the fleet size? I don't think we want to expand the fleet size. That's because I think a 500 BPV point fleet is large enough. I know it's pretty small. I know that. But I don't feel like we really want to have it too large. Yes, it'd be kind of cool to have 1,000-point fleets, but 1,000-point fleets take longer to move every single turn. You're going to have... So those turns...
That's something for like a... That's a weekend get-together thing.
Yeah.
In person.
Right.
Not really conducive to like a tournament.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
Especially a play by mail tournament.
No, this is not play by mail. This is live.
Okay. But still. Online.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, yeah. Agreed. We don't have people. That's one thing about being in person is that you're dedicated those hours to do this game versus online. Invariably, people they dedicate maybe 3 hours a day. And that's, you might play twice a week.
It's convenience thing.
Right.
Versus exactly. Like commitment.
Exactly. So that's why I think 500 BPV is just perfect. It works fine. I like to expand the fleets because I really like to play the Andromedans. And I don't think Andromedans in a fleet context are all powerful and I think that most likely they'll get their butts kicked, especially with the smaller fleets. Moving onward, they had a question: okay, do you want to use EW and Scout? Personally, yes. Yes, it presents a difficulty when you use EW and Scouts because of that's one more variable when it comes to combat. One more to take up your energy. Now, obviously, there is the one thing that he did allow for comments, which is you can say, well, okay, no, but I want basically tournament EW. Basically, there's only two ways of generating ECM, and that's going to be Wild Weasels, and that is cloaking. Those are the two. Possibly maybe even allow erratic maneuvering to occur. So you have those limited forms of EW, but there's nothing to fight that. You know, no ECCM that you can use to fight it, which, you know, I'm not sure that that'd be the greatest thing when it comes to
combat. There's a reason they cut it out of the regular tournament, so.
Yeah.
And quite frankly, I could see that as a good reason for cutting it out of this, because the issue with it, in my opinion, and this is just my opinion, is it prolongs the game. If it makes it harder to hit somebody and do damage, and the reverse is also true, where you're doing less damage to somebody else because they turn around and do the same back, then you're prolonging what is already a long game.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas in like the dual tournament setups, you don't have it in there because of not just you have it there not there because of balance issues mainly.
Mm-hmm.
And in the case of doing it with this, it's like if you're missing with like half your stuff, you're not doing damage to your opponent. And if he misses a whole bunch as well, then you're making the game more of a crapshoot. And when people are missing a lot because of that, they're doing a lot less damage, then you're prolonging what's already a long, long game. And that adds to your potential for people dropping. It adds to your potential for people losing interest in it.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, if you have somebody who realizes he's out EWARD nine ways a Sunday because he didn't have a scout in his fleet and he decides to quit, that throws a monkey wrench in your tournament setup. But I understand that. I mean, that's kind of my opinion. It's more of a, if you want to have a game that is going to get done in so many weeks or days instead of, you know, a few sessions instead of multiple sessions over weeks and weeks and weeks, and then cut the EWAR part out and let people blow each other up nine ways to Sunday. Just saying.
Yeah, understood.
But then people want it in there.
Mm-hmm. Well,
and it's like that also comes down to a matter of taste in some regards.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because if you want to play the quote realistic battle with all the extra rules, why not just do a setup that's dedicated to that particular thing instead of doing it in a tournament format, where you're dragging the tournament aspect out. Just my opinion.
Understood. Iggy, in the chat, I just noticed this because I was futzing with it, which is that he wants to play a 1500 BPV fleets, big fleets. And then it mentions that in those kind of fleets, you need EW. For those kind of large battles, large fleet.
Okay, bring it on, gamers. Gamers a winner, President's Day weekend, baby. It's that contract has been in.
Mm-hmm.
I contracted Labor Day and next year at the same time. So,
yeah,
that would be like an excellent thing to do at something like Gamers, where we could bring all the miniatures in. People could bring a whole bunch of miniatures and have all the space that they need.
Mm-hmm.
And can leave it set up overnight and everything else. It could be a 2 or 3 day thing. I would be all for that. But that's just me. That's my opinion.
Yep. Oh, I understand.
I mean, doing it online, it could be like, I don't know. It just depends on how many people you're going to get and who's controlling what. I think that's the sort of thing that huge sort of thing might be like really suited to live play. But on the other hand, you know, two people doing it, that works too. It's just a lot of like paperwork for each person. and yeah,
and oh, understood, understood. And with those kind of large fleet, the question is there anything I could do to the client to help in that regard? Because other than the thing is, the one battle that I had with the whacked fleet, you know, the five DDLs. That's the only one, and the only one that I've seen that actually like you're saying, I'm not sure I want to play a 1500 BPV Lini fleet without you use SB online, and I can understand that because I can imagine all the counters that you have to track and all that kind of thing, that which is
well, that's like, why you have like 10 people per side.
Right, exactly. And for larger fleets, it's really good to have multiple people per side.
And you could actually use area box things with the counters. Like you could have the swarm counter on there, mm-hmm. and then have all the drones that are part of that on a little piece of paper on the side marked for that drone counter.
Right. Something along the lines of...
There's ways of doing it. Well, then that's the problem with those large battles is they generate their own unique problem.
Right. Agreed.
Their own unique... Okay. Challenges. There you go.
Yeah. Very true. But let's get back to that, which is that I think that was the only battle where the idea of having the ability to duplicate the EAs across multiple ships was a valid thing to do for the most part. In theory, my fleet would have been useful to be able to do that for, like, instead of having to do both E4s, just do one. No, it wasn't E4. Sorry, one destroyer. I can do it for one destroyer and then copy it for the other destroyer. But as soon as you do internals, then that goes out the window. And same thing for the heavy cruisers. They'll do the same thing. You know, kind of just take this and say, okay, now apply the same EA to all of these units.
Do you have a copy and paste function?
Not for the whole EA. No. Okay. Those are, in my mind, limited functionality. I don't think that situation occurs a lot. You know, obviously, when it comes to the larger fleet battles, you know, when you're getting up maybe in a 1500 point, you might actually see that. Especially when if you have a lot of PFs. And next, it's, well, anyway, then with PFs, yeah. The idea of copying the EAs for the PFs, yeah, that actually comes, I think that comes into play, because a lot of times you'll have a whole flotilla of PFs, that's like six of them, and if
are you allow
for leaders and scouts, then you have four that are going to be the same, and having a way of this thing, copy it, bump, 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 you know, have the sentence
duplicate. Are you ready for some heresy?
Some heresy?
Yeah.
What's that?
I'm about to utter some words that may piss people off.
Okay.
What about setting up an AI assistant to do it?
Yeah.
Exactly.
Well, that brings up the other thing, which in theory, I've thought about. And I know that one time I brought it up before, and people were really, like, when it comes to tournament play, they're definitely dead set against it, which is...
Okay, what was that?
The ability to automate the movement of the seeking weapons. As you say, okay.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I can see that. Because there's rules, and then there's decision points where the rule could go either way, but the person wants to make the decision.
Right.
Because they can make the decision, and it actually impacts... the opponent's ability to maneuver or otherwise deal with the issue.
Right. Well, it wasn't those people who wanted the control. That wasn't the people. The people who were upset when it comes to the key, if I introduce the part of the tournament, they felt like the that's if the person who's running a seeking weapon based race can't
they should
do it properly, themselves. They should lose. Instead,
I can see that.
Yes, and
that's part of the play.
Obviously, the benefit when it comes to larger fleets is that if you have, because Lord knows, we had a lot of drones, and that wasn't even a really huge amount of drones. When it comes to the Federation versus my Salatorians, he had around 6 to 12 drones on the board at any time, and that's not a huge number of drones.
No, it's not. Not for squadron.
No. You get the Zindis in there, get the Klingons in there, and possibly in the Feds in there, where they have all these drones. And then, of course, I still remember that game was against the Fed, which was to me was whacked. And that I didn't see, other than the ECM drones, I saw no special drones. You know, I didn't see any I wasn't worried about multi-warhead drones. I don't think that would have been. But I didn't see anything that were stingrays. I think it was stingrays.
Mm-hmm. The weird stuff.
The weird stuff. The I extras. Didn't see it. You know, so
the extra special stuff.
Right. The stuff. The idea of the stuff that you have available to you and that you have on your ship to keep your opponent off guard. I didn't see any of that. Not a single one.
Maybe just wanted to keep it simple.
That's possible. That's possible. By the way, moving onward to the next question, which was, shall we allow conjectural prototype or non-standard units? And I said no. I don't like using conjectural or prototype units. Now, obviously, for me, when it comes to the Saltorians, I think that was a special case. Just because of they didn't have a lot of those ships didn't arrive until after the starting year for the tournament, which is Y-180, which actually there's one thing. Excuse me. I need to go back to this, which is top. Yeah. Okay. Oh, this is, this is that one. This is the original PPV tournament one, which actually it was 180. The question is that the other ones, I think it was like the expansive one. This is the same one. He posted the same link to all of them, which was, I think, yeah. You want to increase it to a little bit larger. Also, I could have sworn you wanted to change the starting year. I don't see it. That might have been on the OneDrive copy, but it wasn't posted here. It could be like maybe 184 or something like that. Because that defines it. Of course, then we had. This was when Eddie Crutchfield came in and said, hey, why can't the feds have PFs? And it's like, personally, they never had them, so I don't think they should have them, i.e. going back to the question of contractual units. And that's what the PFs for Fed are contractual. So it is what it is. The next one was, of course, hydrogen may use up to 24 fires, carriers and escorts. What about other races? And I said, no. It's bad enough we have hydrants, but hydrants were
they're built into it.
Right. Exactly.
But you have if you take a Fed fleet and do a carrier fleet for 500 points, that could all get whacked in like. You know, just, they lose a fighter squadron to a T-bomb or two. Game's over. Yeah. It's okay, just too much.
Definitely, you the big thing is obviously the one thing that I really don't like about fighters is all the freaking seeking weapons that they add.
Mm-hmm. Oh, among other things.
That, to me, that's the biggest issue.
It's the biggest issue, but they're also attrition units. So, I mean, if you're running them properly in a larger fleet, I could see, you know, you could, I could see having the carrier fleet fights on the much larger scale.
Mm-hmm.
But on a small scale fight like this, I think it's going to be really hard to have a balanced fight, mm-hmm. especially if you have one person's running a whole bunch of not fighters against somebody who's got a bunch of fighters, and you just literally run one guy into the middle of the fighter pack and blow it up, and that guy just lost 100 points of his value in one shot.
Right, right.
Among other things.
Yeah, but depending upon the fighters, most fighters, you don't want them to get in close. Especially if they're seeking weapon fighters, you know, like the Feds mm-hmm. have and the Zinnies and the Klingons. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. But you're in a fishbowl.
In theory.
In theory, you're in a maybe slightly larger fishbowl than a tournament map, than the regular tournament map, right. if I remember correctly, and you're still in a fishbowl.
Yep.
You want to do the whole, I'm going to run my fighters through the entire cycle of launching them, having them launch and control all their weapons until they're empty, and then landing them and reloading them, rinsing and repeating. Okay, you're still in a fishbowl. Now, this is the tournament, not a campaign game, not a campaign scenario.
Right. Right.
You're not fighting on a open forever map.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Understood.
I think it's really limiting to what you're trying to do. And yeah, that's kind of it.
Understood. Next is, of course, Lyrans with their PFs. And do you want other races to have PFs? And again, I disagreed, you know. Lyrans with their limited PFs, yeah. I think that's fine, you know, but I don't want it to end up being the whole, okay, we have a lot of whoops. You misspelled
that. Going cookie cutter mode. Yeah. Everybody gets it because one guy has it.
Right.
And that kind of, that dilutes the uniqueness of the different factions.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. He said PT tenders. It's like, no, PF tenders. But I digress. And they tell you, okay, if you agree, then please specify the ideal number of PFs.
Zero.
When it comes to Lyrans, I think it's limited by the point value, especially if we stick with 500 BPV. If we have it extended, we'll have to, as we're going to wait for the survey results.
Yeah, I see that as a... that's borderline with fighters.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's like they're ultimately attrition units,
right.
that could outperform
mm-hmm.
or underperform massively.
Right. Yeah. The big thing with actually the PFs is that unlike fighters, you're not going to, I've never seen one happen that have this happen, which is, have the PFs, quote unquote, land or attach back to the PF tenders and have them reload. I'm not even sure you can do that in the middle of combat. You know.
Well, they don't. The PFs don't have to reload. I mean, they might have to reload drones if they're PFs, right. if they have that system. But all the ones that don't have drones as their primary weapon, they are self-generating.
Right. Oh yeah, when it comes to heavy weapons, yeah, and phasers and so forth.
Yeah. So yeah, they're self-contained units
mm-hmm.
in that respect.
Right, which is when it comes to Larians, you don't have to worry about drones and seeking weapons. You know, that's why I really prefer to limit them to the Larians. Then the other one, which is changed to a standard map, 30 by 42, basically a single map for a fleet battle. The Captain's Log 15 template used previously specified four maps, 504 hexes, 5,040 hexes. So we shrink the map size. And I basically, I said, okay, yeah, I think a standard map, but actually I had to put it down in the section down here, which is, yeah, use a standard hex map, but use a floating map. And which brings up the last question, which is, do you want this open space or do you fire over having some terrain, like a small moon or a class M planet or a gas giant?
That's no moon. Oh, wait. Wrong genre.
Yeah. yep. Yeah, I was thinking, actually, a small moon might be a better one. I was thinking about a class M planet, especially in the case of, I said a planet. My assumption it was going to be a class M planet. And then have it as a floating map so that interesting. Well, Iggy then Jeff got the number wrong. Iggy is saying that actually when it comes to four maps, it's only 4,240 hexes, not 5,040 hexes.
Oh, good God.
I know. Whatever. Doesn't matter. But I feel like having a floating map is a better idea. It limits the range that people can flee from their opponent, and it keeps them relatively close to one another. Yeah, 99 by 99 hex maps is 9,801 hexes, I believe. Yeah, which is, I know that's the one benefit of SFB Online, which is you can create a game board, you know, hex map, any size you want. It could be 30 by 42. Mm-hmm. It could be 50 by 50. It could be.
Here's a question for you.
If you're going to get like 20 by 90, you know, something really wacky. Mm-hmm. Yes.
If this is a tournament, 500 point tournament, right?
Mm-hmm.
Why would you want a floating map like that? That's going to massively favor like some over the other in big ways. If they have like essentially an infinite ability to run away or keep their opponent at a distance and the other guy can't close on them necessarily. It's just one of those age old questions there.
Mm-hmm. Understood. Well, to me, the point of having a floating map is to overall limit the ability of the opponent to run away. Now, to be honest, I don't think that even with the large map that we had, which is basically I think it was
a larger fishbowl.
Yeah, it was basically 60 by 84.
Right.
So it's a pretty big map. And so usually what happens is the first turn you go right dun 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 dun. You basically just closing.
You don't have to start on each edge.
Oh, understood.
You could have them start 35 hexes away from each other. You could have them start like the equivalent of being on a regular,
right,
with all that extra space on the sides.
Understood.
But if you have a floating map, yeah, they're gonna stay together ish, but they can still turn away and run and keep running. They don't have to worry about getting up against terrain,
right,
so to speak.
Yeah, the thing that I was really trying to get at, which is in the experience, they from the one the my experience with just playing out the game, my tournament games, in addition to the one game that I saw with Frank and I forget who else, but Dana, that was it, Dana. Those two going at it, they never really, you know, even though we had this huge, huge map overall.
Were their races?
The last one was Federation versus Klingon.
Okay, I could see them not wanting to be too separated. They're both going to be knife fighters at the end of the day. I mean, if they were plasma chuckers, you might have seen a whole different like play style.
True.
Or they might have used the entire map and everything. But it behooves them to be fairly close to each other because of their direct fire weapon systems.
Right.
So.
Man, and true, that the smaller map, see, that's the one thing, obviously, is that a smaller map would actually allow for the plasma chuckers to have I'm not going to say an advantage, but I think they have a better chance of winning. You know, versus, you know, a more open map.
Oh, I don't know. I mean, they can do the plasma ballet no end tomorrow if you have them on open.
True, they can run. Yeah.
And if they want to play the bolt ballet, they can do that too. And especially they can do that if they have essentially an unlimited map. So that's where doing that with the floating map, you would massively favor like Gorns and Romulans. And the only ones that might be hurt by that on the plasma side would be if they were running, you know, King Eagle type fleets with a limited ability to fight on the oblique. So, but otherwise. Yeah, I think this is just my opinion. I think you really, really benefit from that large map that you had, which still had limits. So you could do the plasma ballet, but you will eventually come up against a corner or a wall, the terrain to deal with. So that, you know, some guy who's playing a direct fire race still has a chance of running you down and doing you in. And if you do terrain, I strongly, strongly suggest that it be like consistent through the tournament, or at least through the rounds, where everybody has to deal with the same terrain. So, just that, you know, even if it changes round to round. But, like, you know, that way you don't have a situation. This terrain favors so-and-so. Because it's like, you can use terrain, like, just planet to break lock-ons.
Right.
As well as force seeking weapons to go around them and so forth and so on. Asteroid belt. That could be very interesting, but again, sometimes the terrains might favor one over the other. And I could see an asteroid belt if there's degradation built into seeking weapons or damage built into seeking weapons going through them, that could be overbearing for, like, if you have, say, Kazeni versus, you know, Fed, and the Fed's all direct fire, and the Kazeni's got a ton of seeking weapons, and those seeking weapons get degraded or damaged by terrain, then that could be bad. Although I don't recall if they do or not. Does plasma get degraded going through an asteroid belt? I forget.
I'm pretty sure it does.
So, yeah, so it's like there's things that are cut out of the standard tournament for a really good reason. And I think you had a pretty good deal going with what you had last time as far as the map goes.
Mm-hmm.
I would strongly suggest, because that also would give you some consistency that the players you just had in that one coming back will know what they're dealing with. And that's basically it. I mean, terrain to me should be something for like scenarios or campaigns, you know, but not necessarily a tournament setup, unless it's terrain that is literally not going to affect any particular race any differently than everybody else. Like, it's not going to severely impede. So, like, impede equally, I guess, would be the way of looking at it. Mm-hmm. Throw a black hole in there, I'm okay with that. That's going to make for a quick game.
Oh, yeah.
Non-floating map, black hole. Woohoo! Yeah.
Wow. Black holes make it really interesting.
Yeah.
And actually, that'd be kind of cool, actually. Give it a, you know, a nice large map, give it black holes. And of course, the biggest issue in my mind with the black holes, if you have damaged ships, they have a tendency of going slowly.
Yeah.
Until they
do slurp. Yeah. Burp. Well, here's a random thought you could throw into your survey.
Well, it's not my survey, it's really Jeff.
Okay, but you could ask to have it added.
Mm-hmm.
What about if you're going to do, if you really, really want to make it interesting, what about carryovers? In other words, have a limited repair capacity.
Mm-hmm.
And make it like a campaign. So you go into your fight, and you could have the random terrain, you could have floating map and whatever. Whoever wins the round, when they advance with whatever they had left.
Wow.
So if one of their ships gets exploded, it's gone. If one of them is crippled, they get, you know, they get a set amount of repairs like in a regular campaign.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a random thought for
that.
You.
That is a random thought.
You could call it rally. You could call it rally to far point or whatever, where everybody starts off and the purpose of the map is you want to be the one that dominates exiting on, say, direction whatever, which is towards the ultimate goal.
Mm-hmm.
You win the tournament round by forcing your opponent to go away or die or concede. And then whatever you've got left, you're not going back for resupply, you're going forward. And then you could throw in a little extra generic-y kind of fudge rule for the drone seeking weapon races that need resupply, where, you know, a convoy catches up to them and says, here, have some extra drones in between rounds, but it'll be a set amount. So if they use up all of their drones, they're not necessarily guaranteed a full resupply.
Right.
you know, they might get like a 50% of their total each round from a combat reload convoy that gets through to them and goes away. So it's a random thought. Because you that would be like, and it would be like a tree tournament that way. You know, each round of it is one tree as they all get closer to the final objective. And that objective could be something like, you know, a new planet that, you know, they have to fight over. And whoever is last man standing at the new planet wins. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
That could be the final terrain piece.
Right, right.
Random thought.
Yeah. I said, but that sounds kind of cool to me.
And they would all have to fight on the same terrain each round, which could be random. Like, you could have a black hole, like, somewhere along the way.
Wow.
Or you could have, like, a nebula they have to go through. You know, as long as the terrain itself doesn't inhibit any particular setup more than anyone else.
Mm-hmm.
You're welcome. That could be interesting. Could be very interesting. Especially if you consider other things you could throw in there, like do they have like a random scenario, like monsters that show up along the way?
Yeah, the randomness, I think, is never a good thing for tournaments. When it comes to having set terrains, that, okay, this round the terrain's going to be this. Next round the terrain's going to be this. Next round the terrain's going to be this. That kind of thing can be accounted for, and therefore people can adjust possibly their fleets, possibly their cabinets options, commander's options, but as the tournament goes forward. But the idea of a random space monster shows up in the scenario, then that's when I think it becomes less of a tournament and more of a campaign.
Yeah, and the thought is like it's almost like a campaign that way.
Oh yeah, oh agree that when it comes to adding different terrain.
I'm thinking back for like the old Captain's
Actually,
Keaton.
It's kind of I agree that's an interesting idea.
So the problem with the Captain's game and the Admiral's game is that you have disinterested player problem, because you have to have an opponent for each round.
Right.
And unless you set it up specifically so that, you know, all the duels are the player on player as part of their thing, you will have parts where it's like you're doing surprise reversed, so as a scenario, and you know, one player's not playing their actual tournament ships. They're playing against somebody else's tournament ship.
Right.
You know. But something like that would be kind of along the Captain's game line without the scenarios thrown in it.
Mm-hmm.
Where each round is the duel of the 500-point fleets. As you're going through, like, all these different terrain potentials. So to get to like the final bracket. So
understood.
Heck, the final bracket could even be like if you really want to be mean. I mean, if you want to make it a challenge, it could be like a small armed colony that doesn't like either faction, and it says, yeah, you guys have to disable or destroy our pre-orbiting small bases,
yeah,
or something like that. And they could be like civilian bases, but still, that's a challenge if you've got two 500-point fleets that are hostile to each other going at it
right
at the same time,
or
even without phaser fours to deal with.
Well, the whole idea of a boss level where you have like the maybe one or two juggernauts running around. Which
Yeah, or something, or automated defenses.
right, I think I'm.
Have like a ring of satellites, just, and they'll shoot at anybody that gets close enough.
Right. Yeah, that's
Yeah.
true. An automated system would be much better
So.
for that kind of thing. But that,
Yeah,
I
it's like.
agree, it's kind of interesting ideas. But anyway, with that, I think we need to wrap it up because it is getting late and I
Okay.
need to put my head down.
Yeah. Well, let's try to get together before you go off to your retreat once.
Okay.
Either in person or online, so.
Probably you can be online
Okay.
because this weekend's not crazy busy, but it's gonna be pretty busy.
Oh, understood. So, well, thank you for having me on, Paul.
Okay, you're welcome. Okay, you have a good night.
You too. Thanks.
So, just two things. One, a reminder that we will not have a podcast next week. Two, obviously, not got to talk about the upcoming 500 BPP tournament. Hopefully, that will be starting soon. Obviously, for those of you who listen to the news portion and been checking out the discussion board, the SEPHR 19 tournament is currently stuck. Because we have one player who signed up but never paid, and it seemed to have disappeared. So I'm gonna send out Carl Magnus something. Suggested sending out an email to everyone concerned about what's going on with the tournament, and I understand the idea of communication. Hopefully, I'll do that this weekend. Actually, I should be able to get it done this weekend. Definitely not tomorrow night. Tomorrow night is going to be bowling. Bowling has started, people. So that means all Friday nights for me are gone. I will be basically getting off of work, then grabbing something to eat, heading out the door, get back from bowling, go to bed. That is the plan for my Fridays. So it's going to be the whole funville of, if you send me any email from Thursday or Friday, don't expect me to reply to it unless until Saturday, because I don't usually have time. I don't usually don't have time to answer my personal email while I'm at work. And if I don't have any time off of work to answer my email, it's not going to happen. And that happened, and that's Thursday, Friday nights. It gets crazy. So anyhow, had I, for that, I am Paul Franz, and I bid you a good night.